Okay, right, today we're going to take a look at two further examples of the application of the divide and conquer methodology to the development of fast algorithms. The first example we're going to take a look at is to finding the kth smallest element from a collection of n elements. And the second one we're going to look at is that of finding the closest pair of points from a collection of n points in two dimensions. Let's start with the first of these problems, namely the selection problem. To begin with, I'd like to define a quantity called the rank, and then we'll see how this plays in the definition of the selection problem. Okay. Right, so rank, as far as rank goes, consider a collection of n elements and arrange them into ascending order of their key, then rank simply gives you the position of the element in ascending order. Okay. So if you had a collection of elements, for example, this collection here, this has already been arranged into ascending order. If the collection was initially given to you as not arranged in this order, to determine the rank of elements, we could first order them and then basically look at the position of an element and declare that as its rank. So, for example, here, the rank of 2 is 0. It's the 0th element in ascending order. And the rank of 15 is 5. It is the, if you look at the index, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it has index 5 in ascending order. Okay. Similarly, the rank of 20, okay, if you index beginning at 0, this would have the index 7. Okay. All right, so the rank of an element is basically its position or index in ascending order of key. Okay. Now, in the selection problem, we're given a collection of n unordered or unsorted elements, and the objective is to determine the kth smallest element. Okay. Translating that into rank, we're really looking for the element whose rank is k minus 1. Okay. So when k is 1, you're looking for the smallest element, and that element has rank 0. When k is 2, you're looking for the second smallest element, and that element has rank 1. So ranks and the k as used in the selection problem are off by 1. Okay. Some applications of determining the element of a given k value, it's equivalent to determining an element of given rank or specified rank, are, one, you may be interested in finding out the median score on exam 2, for example. So if you had 250 students take the test, you'd like to know what was the median score. The test scores are perhaps not ordered and are just available in some unsorted sequence. Okay. All right, so in this case, the k value would be the ceiling of n over 2, n being the number of elements in the collection whose rank you want to get, or from whom you want to find the median. Okay. All right, similarly, you may be interested in knowing the median salary of computer scientists, or you may be interested in finding out all of the people whose salaries in the bottom 10% of a collection or in the top 10% of a collection. And to do that, you'd need to first find out what is the salary which defines the boundary between the bottom 10% and the rest, or between the top 10% and the rest. And once you have this, you can then classify people as either being in the bottom 10% or not being in the bottom 10%. Okay. All right, so a few applications of the selection problem. Now, obviously, the simplest way to find the kth smallest element is to just go run your favorite sorting algorithm. So you sort the n elements into ascending order of key, and then if you're looking for the kth smallest element, you pick up the fellow whose rank is k minus 1 in ascending order. Okay. And if you run a merge sort or a heap sort, you would run in n log n time. Okay. All right, so the selection problem can be solved in n log n time fairly simply by performing a sort. What is interesting is that we can cut this time down to order of n, okay, by using a divide and conquer that is tailored to this particular problem. Okay. All right, so let's take a look at how the method works. Okay. It's really a takeoff on the method used for quicksort. Okay. So suppose we want to find the kth element from this collection of elements here. Okay. So we have an unsorted collection of elements. And to find that, we will run, let's say, one step of quicksort, which is you take a pivot, and using the pivot, you partition these elements into a small group, a big group, and then the pivot lies in the middle. Okay. And for simplicity, let's assume that we're going to take the leftmost element as the pivot. So using this as the pivot and running the in-place partitioning scheme, we would end up with this reordering of elements. Okay. Once we have this rearrangement of elements, we can look at the index of the pivot. Okay. So the pivot has a rank that is 5. So if you count from here, that's 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Okay. So the pivot has rank 5, and that tells us that the pivot is the 6th smallest element. Okay. Knowing this, okay, we know that if we were trying to find the 6th smallest element, we're done. It's the pivot. I don't have to do anything more. On the other hand, if I'm trying to find the kth smallest, where k is smaller than 6, then it has to be in the left group here, okay, in this blue group. In which case, I can make a recursive call to find the kth smallest element in the left group. Okay. Unlike quicksort, I don't have to bother with the right group. I don't have to come back and do anything here. Okay. In quicksort, you had to sort the left group and you had to sort the right group also. But here, I just do a selection in the left group and then I'm done. On the other hand, if k is bigger than 6, you're looking for somebody in the yellow group, the group on the right out here. Okay. And the element you're looking for in this yellow group is no longer the kth smallest element in the yellow group, because we're going to bypass these 6 small elements up to and including the index. And therefore, the element you're looking for in the yellow group is the k minus 6th smallest element in the yellow group, or more formally, it's k minus the rank of the pivot minus 1. That gives you the k value to use when you make the recursive call on the yellow group here. Okay. All right, so the method is like quicksort. You use a pivot. Using the pivot, you partition into the left group, the blue group here, the yellow group, the right group, and then the pivot is in the middle. The rank of the pivot is easily determined. And then if k equals 1 plus the rank of the pivot, you're done. This is what you're looking for. If k is smaller, then you have to be looking for the kth element here. If k is bigger, you're looking for someone here, but not the kth. To figure out which element you're looking for here, you subtract from k the rank of the pivot and 1. Okay. All right, if you were to analyze the time complexity, we'll see that like quicksort, the worst case here is going to arise when the partition that you have to search for the recursive call. So let's say you have to look into the left group. Well, if the left group is of size n minus 1, so the pivot is totally to the right and you have to look in the left group, or the pivot is totally to the left and you have to look in the right group, which is of size n minus 1. Okay. So the worst case is really the same as that for quicksort, and that's order of n square. But if you were to perform an average case analysis here, which we aren't going to do in class at least, the average performance is order of n. Okay. Now we can be more careful in terms of how we select the pivot here to bring the worst case complexity down to order of n. And the way to select the pivot in this case is, or one of the ways, is to take your n elements, divide them out into n over 9 groups, with each group having 9 elements. Okay. The last group, of course, may have somewhat less than 9. Okay. Then for each of these 9 groups, you find the median element. Okay. And then you take the median of the n over 9 medians that you have and use that as the pivot. Okay. This is somewhat of a generalization of the scheme used in Java's quicksort implementation, where they actually partition n elements into 9 groups, and then you find their medians and so on. Okay. So here you partition into n over 9 groups, each group having 9 elements. You find the median of each of those 9, and then you take the median of the n over 9 medians as the pivot. Okay. Right, once you do this, you can then prove that the thing works, the algorithm works in order of n time. Okay, so by simply running quicksort and throwing out one of the recursive calls in there, you get a selection algorithm whose expected performance is order of n. By being more careful in your choice of the pivot, using the median of median rules as just described, the worst case complexity becomes order of n. All right, let's now turn our focus to the second problem I want to look at today, and that is the problem of finding the closest pair of points in 2 dimensions. Okay. So we're given n points. Okay. For example, here, okay, so I have a collection of n points in 2-dimensional space, okay, and I'd like to find the pair of points that's closest, and if you eyeball this stuff over here, you'll see that the closest pair of points is really these 2 points out here. Okay, so our objective is to identify those 2 points. Why are we interested in this problem? Okay. Well, one application of the problem could be in a manufacturing environment where maybe you have a sheet of metal such as this one, and what's marked out on this sheet are the places where we'd like to drill holes. Now, before turning our drill loose on this task and drilling holes, we'd like to verify that no 2 holes are so close that when you start to drill holes there, you will end up tearing the sheet, the metal sheet. Okay. So it shouldn't be hard for you to see that if you took these 2 holes and brought them very, very close together, when you try to drill, if you've drilled one hole and then when you're trying to drill the second, the small metal strip in between would buckle. Okay. All right, so we'd like to make sure we don't have 2 holes that are too close to each other. Okay. So you're given some threshold in this example, let's say given 1 inch. You want to be sure you have no holes that are within 1 inch apart. And an easy way to answer that question would be to first find the pair of points that's closest, perhaps as this pair here, then measure the distance between these 2, and if it exceeds 1 inch, you're okay. Or if it's equal to or exceeds an inch, you're okay. All right. An application in 3 dimensions. Okay. So maybe you have a whole bunch of planes flying around near a busy airport, say, and you'd like to make sure that no 2 planes get closer than some given threshold. So perhaps you don't want any pair of planes to be closer than 2 miles. And one way to verify that is to constantly determine which 2 planes are closest to each other, and then measure the distance between the 2 and make sure that's at least equal to the threshold that's permitted. Okay. Now, a simple solution to the problem of finding the closest pair of points is to simply look at all pairs of points. So if you have n points, then there are n times n minus 1 over 2 pairs of points. And for each of these roughly n square pairs of points, you determine the distance between the pairs, and you find out which pair has the smallest distance. Okay. Now, that runs in order of n square time, simply because you got n square pairs to look at to compute the distance between 2 points in a pair is order 1, and then to find the minimum of n square items is order of n square. Okay. A divide and conquer solution, which runs in order of n log n time, okay, can be arrived at using really the basic principles of divide and conquer. You need to have the notion of a small instance, which can be solved using some simple direct method. Okay. we may choose a small instance, in this case to be, let's say, n less than 3, n less than 4, 5, some number, and solve that small instance using the brute force strategy we just outlined, where you look at every pair of points in that small instance, compute the distance, and find the one which is minimum. Okay. All right, so for now, we're not going to be too specific about what a small instance is, but it could be up to 2 points, 3 points, 4, 5, okay? No matter what our boundary is, we know how to solve that in a straightforward manner. We use the brute force scheme that we just discussed. Okay. When n is large, divide and conquer suggests taking that large instance, breaking it up into two or more smaller instances, A and B. To get good performance, you want these instances A and B to be of roughly the same size. Okay. So we're going to take our point set, divide it into roughly equal parts A and B. We could do 3, 4 or more, but we'd need to figure out how to do the combining in an efficient manner. And our algorithm's going to just break into two parts. Okay. All right, once you know how many parts, you then need to know, well, how are you doing the dividing? Okay. And in our case, we're going to do the dividing just down the x-axis. Okay, so I'll have points in A essentially being to the left of points in B. Right, then I'm going to solve these subproblems recursively. So I'm going to find the closest pair of points in A. Okay. I'll also find the closest pair of points in B recursively. Okay. Now, the answer to my problem is either the closest pair of points in A or the closest pair of points in B, or it is a pair with the property that one point is in A and the other point is in B. So I'll also determine the closest pair of points such that one point is in A and the other one is in B. Okay. Now, these two subproblems you can do recursively because they're instances of the same problem. Find the closest pair of points in a collection. Okay. This one, you can't solve using this technique recursively, the divide and conquer technique we're just describing, because here we're not looking for the closest pair of points in a collection, but we're looking for a closest pair of points with one point in one collection and the other point in the other collection. So I'm going to have to figure out some way to solve this instance. All right. So I've got three subproblems, one in A, one in B, and one which kind of spans A and B. But once I figure out the closest pair in A, the closest pair in B, and the closest pair with this property, then I know that my answer is one of these three pairs, and it's the one which has the smallest distance. Okay, so that part isn't difficult to do. Let's look at an example to illustrate this. Okay, all right, so here's my collection of endpoints. I'm going to do the dividing into the two smaller instances of roughly equal size by drawing a vertical line. Okay, everything to the left of the vertical line will be in A, everything to the right of the vertical line will be in B. Okay. Now, if you have a whole bunch of points that fall on this line, for example, we'll put some of them in A, some in B, so that you get roughly equal in A and equal in B. Okay. All right, so we divide our points into two sets, A and B, with the property that the points in A have an x-coordinate that is less than equal to the points in B. In other words, they are basically to the left of those in B, except for those points that lie on the line. Some of them are in A, some are in B. All right, then we'll find the closest pair of points in A. Okay, that's this one. And let the distance between this closest pair be D1. Right, then we'll find the closest pair of points in B. Okay. And let the distance between these two points be D2. Okay. Now, we know that the closest pair of points in this entire collection is either this pair with distance D1, or it is that pair with distance D2, or it is a pair with one point here and one point there, and the distance between those two fellows must be smaller than d1 and smaller than d2. Okay, so we compute the smaller of d1 and d2. Okay, and once we've done that, if d equals d1, then this fellow is eliminated. If d equals d2, then that pair is eliminated. Okay, all right. So from these two pairs, it's not hard to decide which one is the surviving candidate. We now only need to know if there is a better candidate with one point in A and the other point in B. Okay, so our problem now reduces to this question here. If there is such a point, such a pair of points, then that is the answer. If there isn't, then the surviving pair from these two is the answer. Okay. All right, so to answer the question, is there a pair of points, one point in A, one in B, with a distance smaller than D between them? We know that those points, okay, the point in A, for example, has to be within a distance of D of this dividing line. Okay, if you look at points on this side of the dividing line, well, they cannot be a distance less than d from points on this side because they're d from this red line, and therefore they are at least a distance d for any point in B. Okay, so we don't need to look at anybody on this side of the yellow line. Okay, similarly, I don't need to look at anybody on that side of the yellow line in B. Okay, if you have a pair with the property that one point is in A, the other in B, and the distance is smaller than d, then this pair has to lie in the comparing region that's defined out here. So one point has to be between this yellow and red, in the rectangle defined by this yellow and red vertical lines. Okay, and the point in B has to be between or within the rectangle defined by these vertical red and yellow lines here. Okay. So your pair, the point in A must be in RA, and the point in B must be in RB. Points of A outside of RA are too far from the dividing line to be close enough to points in B. Similarly, points in B that are outside of RB are too far from the dividing line to be close enough to any point in RA that the distance would be smaller than D. All right, so I can limit my search to points in RA and RB. Okay. Unfortunately, it may be that all of your points in A happen to fall in RA and all of the points in B happen to fall in RB, so that this observation doesn't really help you in terms of reducing the number of points you need to look at. Okay. All right, now let's consider a point Q that is in RA. Okay. Let's say you're looking at this point over here. My strategy is going to be to take a look at every point in RA and see if that point has a corresponding point in RB that is a distance less than D from it. Okay. So when I'm looking at, say, this particular point Q, okay, then I'm going to limit my search instead of just going and looking at every single point in RB, because there may be n over 2 points in RB to look at. Okay, so that doesn't help you. If you spend n over 2 time at each point in Q, and RA has n over 2 points in it, you're back to your n square algorithm. Okay. All right, so if you look at any point Q, we want to know, is it within a distance D from any point in RB? Okay. And for that, I know that I need to look at most a distance D below and a distance D above. So this point here, for example, if this is more than d away from q in the y direction, there's no point looking at it because this distance cannot be smaller than d. Okay. All right, so I define a rectangle by looking at the y coordinate of q, and you subtract d from it here, and you subtract d from it over there. Okay. So I basically need to compare Q with all of the points that lie within this rectangle defined by this red left line, yellow right, and the upper blue and lower blue lines. Okay. Now, if it turns out that the number of points that can fall inside this rectangle is small, maybe it is some constant, like 5, 6, 10, then the amount of time I have to spend on each point Q in RA, checking to see if it has a corresponding point in RB that is closer than D, becomes that constant. Let's say 6 points, then I have to spend only 6 units of time at each Q, and Q may have n over 2 points, so I would have to spend, say, 6 times n over 2 units of time checking if there is a point closer than D with one point in RA and the other point in RB. Okay. All right, so I need to look at only the points in this rectangle. Okay. Within this rectangle, in a real situation, there may be no point. There may be one point, there may be two, there may be three. And what I'd like to really show is that in this rectangle, which is the comparing region of Q, you cannot have more than, say, 6 points, and therefore the work needed in verifying whether Q has a closer point than D, that has a point in RB that is closer than D, takes only a constant amount of time for each point Q. Okay. All right, now what we know is that the points in this rectangle, okay? All right, so let's make a distinction first. As far as the algorithm goes, the algorithm only needs to look at points that lie within the rectangle, okay? And it doesn't need to know how many such points are. It just defines the rectangle and looks at points that lie in the rectangle. And then it ends up with some complexity, okay? Now, from the standpoint of proving what that complexity is, we need to know how many points could lie in the rectangle, okay? So what we're going to do now is something that's not important from the algorithm point of view, but is important from the complexity analysis point of view. How much work is done when you look at a point Q in RA and compare it with all the points in the comparing region for that point? Okay. Now, we know that all of the points in the comparing region, they have to be at least a distance of d apart, okay? And that's so because the closest pair of points in B has a distance that is d sub 2, and d is less than or equal to d sub 2, and so you can't have two points in RB that are closer than d, okay? All right, so I look at this rectangle, and now I ask myself, well, how many points could I possibly have in this rectangle with the property that no two points are closer than D? Okay. So if you try to place points in here to see how many could you do with this property, what you'll see is that there really isn't any way to place more than 6 points. And one way to get those 6 would be to place points at the 4 corners as well as points in the middle of the vertical lines. Okay. So if you look at this, now you have 6 points, and the distance between these two is d, the distance between those two is d, these two is d, those are d, d, okay? And if you look at these diagonal things, the distance is more than d, okay? So I've placed 6 points in this comparing region with the property that no two points are closer than d. If you try to place more than 6, you'll find it really can't be done, okay? So what we see is that for every point Q in R sub A, its comparing region has at most 6 points. So when we are running through the last part of the algorithm, which is to scan all of the points in RA, compare them with points in their comparing region in RB to see if there is a point that is closer to Q than this distance D that has already been determined. At that time, you can do at most 6 units of work for each Q, and Q in the worst, R sub A in the worst case could contain all n over 2 points that belong in this region. So you can spend only linear time, order of n time, trying to determine whether there's a point in A that is closer to a point in B than the distance D. All right, so with that, we can proceed to come up with the complexity analysis. Okay. What we're going to do in implementing the algorithm is we will first sort all of the points by x. So we'll create a sorted list by x. That'll take us n log n time. In addition, we'll create a separate sorted list by y. Okay, so we'll have two lists of points, one sorted by x, one sorted by y. Now, once you have these two lists, then to divide into A and B, you simply need to go through the sorted list, and down the middle of the list, the left half goes to A and the right half goes to B. Okay. So once you have the sorted list by X, you can do the dividing into A and B in order one time. Okay. The sorted list by Y is needed to construct the the points in the comparing region. Okay, and using the sorted list by Y, you can examine points in the comparing region in linear time. Okay. Now, the other thing you need to be able to do is to take these lists and create sublists so that when you do a recursive subdivisioning into A and B, you need to be able to get the sorted by Y and sorted by X lists for A and for B. And those sorted lists can be constructed in order of n time from these sorted lists. Okay. So no further sorting is needed. All right, for our analysis, we'll assume that n less than 4 defines a small instance. All right, so the complexity analysis takes the following form then. Suppose you have t of n as the time to find the closest pair, and this excludes the initial sorting by x and sorting by y. Okay. In the end, we'll add n log n or 2 log n to whatever we end up with to account for the sort by x and sort by y. All right, so the runtime is a constant when you're dealing with a small instance. And when dealing with a large instance, we need to recursively solve the problem on the group A that has n over 2 elements. We need to recursively solve the problem on the group of points B that has n over 2 elements, so that's tn over 2 here. Then we need to create the sorted by X and sorted by Y lists for A before we make this recursive call. We need to create the sorted by X and sorted by Y lists for B before we make this recursive call. That takes a linear amount of time, so that's buried in this D times N. Once we have done the recursive solution for A and the recursive solution for B, then I know D1, the distance between the closest pair of points here, D2, the distance between the closest pair of points there. I take the min of D1 and D2, and that gives me the D that was being used previously, which is different from the D that is being used in this slide here. Okay. And knowing that distance, I can then spend order of n time to find out whether there's a pair with one point in A, the other point in B, and its distance is smaller than the smallest distance found so far. And that amount of time is also buried inside of this d times n. Okay. All right, so this becomes my recurrence equation. And if you want to solve this recurrence equation using repeated substitution, we would assume that n is a power of 2. Okay. If you look at this recurrence equation, you'll actually see that this recurrence equation is the same as the one for merge sort, okay. Except that here a small instance is smaller than 4. In the merge sort case, a small instance was 1 or less. Okay. So other than that, the recurrence looks the same. And if you use repeated substitution, you'll end up with n log n as being the runtime. Okay. Now, as was the case for merge sort, we might find advantage to using a cutoff between small and large that is different from the four that's given out here. For the case of merge sort, if you recall, I pointed out that a merge sort is actually slower than an insertion sort if you're sorting up to, say, about 15 elements. Okay. And the reason for that has to do with the overheads involved with merge sort, which are larger than the overheads involved with insertion sort. So the constant coefficients in front of the n log n and the n square for insertion sort are different. Okay. You'd expect the same to be true here, that the constant coefficient in front of the n log n for this divide and conquer method is perhaps somewhat larger than the constant in front of the order of n square for the brute force or simple method to find the closest pair of points. So it might well be the case that the simple n square scheme works better than what we have here for perhaps a value of n that goes up to maybe 15 or maybe even larger. Okay. So we could run some experiments and find out where the crossover point is, and then we could modify our definition here to say that a small instance is maybe n smaller than 15, and if n, okay, this here should be an n, if n is greater than or equal to 15, well, then we will do the dividing. Okay. All right, so to summarize then, using divide and conquer, and really we aren't doing anything terribly sophisticated in arriving at this algorithm. We're using the basic principles in divide and conquer, namely, define what a small instance is, everything else is a large instance. Take the large, for the small instance, you need to have a direct way to solve, and in our case, it's a brute force, try out all n squared pairs of points. For the large instance, you need to break it up into some number of roughly equal size groups. So we break it up into two. You need a strategy to break it. Simple strategy is cut it down by drawing a vertical line so that you've got n over two elements to the left of the line, n over two to the right. Recursively solve the two groups. And in this case, there's a little twist. After you solve recursively for A and for B, the answer is not immediate because one case is left out. There may be a point in A and a point in B, which is better. Okay. And then you do a little bit of thought to figure out how to handle that case, and you end up with the n log n algorithm. Okay, we're going to stop here. Thank you.